structure, that meant only one class every other year would be chosen. Put bluntly, you were just as likely to die in a traffic accident. Given how Shuya never had the luck of the draw, he figured he wouldn't be chosen. Even in the local raffle, he'd never win more than a box of tissues. He'd never be chosen. So fuck off, man. But then sometimes, when he heard someone in class, particularly a girl in tears, saying something like, "My cousin was in the program and..." That dark fear choked him up again. He was angry, too. I mean, who had the right to terrify that poor girl? But within a matter of days, the same girl who'd been so gloomy would begin smiling, and Shuya's fear and anger would gradually wane and disappear too. But the vague distrust and powerlessness he felt toward the government nonetheless remained. That was the way things went. And when Shuya entered his third year in junior high school this year, he, along with his other classmates, assumed they would be safe. Actually, they really had no choice but to assume this. Until now. "That can't be." A chair fell as someone stood up. The voice was shrill enough to make Shuya glance over at the desk behind Hiroki Sugimura. It was Kyoichi Motobuchi, the male class representative. His face was beyond pale. It had turned gray, a surreal contrast to his silver-framed glasses, and resembled one of those silkscreen prints by Andy Warhol labeled in their art textbooks as the decadent art of American imperialists. Some of his classmates might have been hoping that Kyoichi would provide some adequate, rational form of protest. Kill the friends you were hanging out with yesterday? It was impossible. Someone was making a mistake here. "Hey, Rep, can you take care of this one for us?" But Kyoichi completely let them down. "My father is a director of environmental affairs in the prefectural government. How could the class I'm in be selected for the program?" Due to his shaking, his tense voice sounded even more wound up than usual. The man who called himself Sakamochi grinned and shook his head, his long hair swinging in the air. "Let's see. You're Kyoichi Motobuchi, right?" Kyoichi nodded. "You must know what equality means. Listen up. All people are born equal. Your father's job in the prefectural government doesn't entitle you to special privileges. You are no different." "Listen up, everybody," Sakamochi said. "You all have your own distinct personal backgrounds. Of course, some of you come from rich families, some from poor families. But circumstances beyond your control like that shouldn't determine who you are. You must all realize what you're worth on your own. So, Kyoichi, let's not delude ourselves that you're somehow special."
"Because you're not."
Sakamochi bawled this out so suddenly, Kyoichi fell back into his seat. Sakamochi glared at Kyoichi for a while, but then his smile returned. "Your class will be mentioned in today's morning news. Of course, because the program must be conducted in secret, the details will remain undisclosed until the game ends. Now let's see." "Oh, right." He looked down at his notes. "Your parents have already been notified." Everyone still seemed lost in a daze. Classmates slaughtering each other? Impossible. "You still don't believe this is happening, do you?" Sakamochi scratched his head with a troubled look. Then he turned to the entrance and called out, "I need you guys to come in." In response, the door slid open and three men came rushing in. They were all wearing camouflage fatigues and combat boots, and tucked under their arms they carried steel helmets bearing the Peach insignia. It was immediately obvious they were Special Defense Forces soldiers. They had assault rifles strapped over their shoulders, and Shuya could see automatic pistols holstered onto their belts. One of the soldiers was tall with strangely kinked hair, giving the impression of someone frivolous. Another was medium height, with a handsome, boyish-looking face. The last one wore a slight grin, but was eclipsed by the charisma of the other two. They were carrying a large, thick nylon sack resembling a black sleeping bag. Various parts of the bag poked up as if it were stuffed with pineapples. Sakamuchi stood by the window, and the three men placed the bag on the lectern. Both sides of the bag protruded over the lectern, particularly the side facing the window, and dangled down, perhaps because the contents inside were soft. Sakamuchi announced, "Let me introduce these men who will be assisting you during the program. Mr. Tahara, Mr. Kondo, and Mr. Nomura. Now why don't you show them what's inside?" The frivolous one, Tahara, approached the lectern from the side of the hall, placed his hand on the zipper, and pulled the bag open. Something drenched in red, "Ai!" Before it was fully open, one of the girls in the front row screamed. She was immediately followed by the others. As the desks and chairs made a clattering sound, other voices shouted, "What?" And a soprano chorus swelled up. Shuya held his breath. He could see the body of the teacher in charge of Class B, Masao Hayashida, inside the half-open bag. He was now their former teacher. In fact, he was now the former Mr. Hayashida. His flimsy blue-gray suit was drenched in blood. Only half of the large black glasses that had earned him the nickname Dragonfly remained. What could you expect? Only the left half of his head remained. Underneath the remaining lens, the marble-like, crimson eyeball gazed absently at the ceiling. Gray jelly, what must have been his brains, clung to his remaining hair. As if relieved to be released, his left arm, still wearing a watch, slid out of the bag and dangled in front of the lectern. The ones sitting in front might have actually seen the second hand ticking away. "All right, all right, all right, quiet now." Sakamuchi clapped his hands, but the girl's shrieking wouldn't subside. "Be quiet."
"Silence!"
Suddenly, the boyish-looking soldier named Kondo pulled out his pistol. Shuya expected a warning shot into the ceiling, but the soldier instead grabbed the bag containing Hayashida with one of his hands and dragged the bag down from the lectern. He snapped Hayashida's head up to his face. He looked like the hero of a sci-fi flick facing off against a giant bagworm. The soldier pumped two bullets into Mr. Hayashida's head. The rest of Hayashida's head flew apart. The high-powered bullets tore apart his brains and bones. The chunky mist splattered all over the faces and chests of the students in the front row. The echoes from the gunfire subsided. There was hardly any trace of Hayashida's head. The soldier tossed Hayashida's body to the side of the lectern. No one was screaming. 42 students remaining. Chapter 4. Most of the standing students timidly returned to their seats. The uncharismatic soldier on the far side dragged the bag containing Hayashida's body to the corner of the classroom, then joined the other two standing by the lectern. Sakamuchi returned to his position behind the lectern. Once again, the room turned silent, but that silence was soon broken by the sound of someone groaning in the back, followed by the damp splash of vomit splattering against the floor. Shuya could smell it. "Listen up, everyone. As you can see, Mr. Hayashida vehemently opposed your class's assignment to the program," Sakamuchi said, scratching his head. "Well, it was all so sudden. We do feel bad about it, but..." The room grew silent again. Everyone now knew. This was real. It was no mistake, nor was it a prank. They were going to be forced to kill each other. Shuya desperately tried to think clearly. The unreal situation had put him in a daze. His mind was spinning from the gruesome corpse of Hayashida, the centerpiece in this horror show. They had to escape. But how? Okay, first he'd meet with Yoshitoki, Shinji, and Hiroki. But how was the program actually conducted? The details were never publicized. Students were given weapons to kill each other. That much was known. But could they talk to each other? How did the government monitor the game?
I...
Shuyu's thoughts were interrupted. He looked up and opened his eyes. Yoshitoki Kuninobu half rose and gazed at Sakamochi, unsure, it seemed, whether he should continue. He looked as if his words were beyond his control. Shuyu's body tensed up.
Don't provoke them, Yoshitoki.
Yes, Sakamochi asked. What is it? You can ask me anything. Sakamochi offered a friendly smile, and like a puppet, Yoshitoki continued.
I don't have parents.
So who did you contact?
Aha,
Sakamochi nodded. I remember there was someone from one of the welfare institutions. So you must be Shuya Nanahara? Let's see. According to the school report, you were the one with dangerous ideas. So, I'm Shuya. Shuya interrupted, raising his voice. Sakamochi glanced at Shuya and then back at Yoshitoki. Still in a daze, Yoshitoki glanced back at Shuya.
Oh, that's right. I'm so sorry. There was one more. You must be Yoshitoki Kuninobu.
Well, I contacted the superintendent of the institution where you were both raised.
Yes, she was very pretty,
Sakamochi said and grinned. While his smile appeared to be cheerful, there was something disturbing about it. Shuya's face tensed up. What the hell did you do to Miss Ano?
Well, like Mr. Hayashida, she was very uncooperative. They both didn't accept your assignment, so in order to silence her, well, I had to,
Sakamochi said calmly,
rape her.
Oh, don't worry. It's not like she's dead. Shuya flashed red with anger and leapt up, but before he could say anything, Yoshitoki said,
I'll kill you.
Yoshitoki was on his feet. His face had changed. He'd always been so friendly to everyone. No matter what happened, it was impossible to imagine him getting angry. His expression now was something he saved for those rare times he was truly enraged. No one else in class might have ever seen him like this, but Shuya had seen him this upset twice. The first time was when they were fourth graders and a car ran over the charity house's pet dog, Eddie, right in front of the gate. Frantically, Yoshitoki chased after the fleeing car. The second time was only a year ago, when a man had been using the school's debt as leverage to come on to Miss Ano. After she managed to pay back the money, thereby rejecting his advances, the man cursed her outright in front of them, as if he wanted all the charity house's residents to hear him. If Shuya hadn't stopped Yoshitoki, the man would have lost his front teeth, though Yoshitoki would have also been severely injured. Yoshitoki was extremely kind, and even when he was insulted or picked on, he usually laughed it off. But when someone he truly loved was hurt, his response was extreme. This was something Shuya admired about Yoshitoki. I'll kill you, you bastard, Yoshitoki shrieked. I'll kill you and dump you in a pile of shit. Sakamochi looked amused.
Are you serious, Yoshitoki?
You know one must be responsible for the things one says.
Give me a break. I'm going to kill you. Don't you forget it.
Stop it, Yoshitoki. Stop it.
Yoshitoki paid no attention to Shuya's screaming. Sakamochi spoke in a strange, kind voice, as if to appease Yoshitoki. Look, Yoshitoki, what you're doing right now is voicing your opposition to the government.
I'll kill you.
Yoshitoki didn't stop.
I'll kill you, I'll kill you, I'll kill you.
Shuya could no longer contain himself, and right when he was about to scream again, Sakamochi shook his head and waved his hand at the three Special Defense Forces soldiers standing by the lectern. They resembled a chorus group, like the four freshmen. The men in fatigues, Tahara, Kondo, and Nomura, all lifted their right hands in a dramatic, emotionally charged pose. But their hands were holding guns. Now the chorus would have been something like,
Baby, please,
Baby, please, spend this night with me.
Shuya saw Yoshitoki's bulging eyes open even wider. The three automatic pistols exploded all at once. Just as he was stepping out into the aisle, Yoshitoki's body shook as if dancing the boogaloo. It happened so quickly that Noriko Nakagawa, who sat right behind Yoshitoki, along with the rest of the class, didn't even have time to duck. The gunshot sounds hadn't even died down before Yoshitoki slowly tipped over to the right and crashed down in between his desk and Izumi Kanai's on the right. Izumi shrieked. The three soldiers stood with their right hands extended. Thin smoke from each of their barrels simultaneously trailed upward. Shuya then saw the familiar face turn to him from in between the legs of the desk. The bulging eyes remained open, fixed on a point on the floor. A bright puddle of blood began oozing out onto the floor. Yoshitoki's right shoulder began twitching down to his fingers.
Yoshitoki!
Shuya stood up to run to him, but Noriko Nakagawa, who was sitting closer, was quicker.
Yoshitoki!
She screamed and crouched down beside him. Now Tahara, the frivolous one, aimed his gun at Noriko and pulled the trigger. Noriko tumbled forward as if she were swept off her feet and collapsed on top of Yoshitoki, who continued to twitch. Tahara immediately pointed his gun at Shuya. Shuya's mind was racing now, but his body was frozen. Only his eyes moved. He saw the blood spurting out of Noriko's calf. Sakamochi said to Noriko, "You will not leave your desk without my permission." Then he looked over at Shuya, saying, "The same applies to you, Shuya. Now sit down." Shuya did his best to take his eyes away from Noriko's bloody leg and Yoshitoki underneath her. He looked Sakamochi directly in the eye. His neck muscles had tensed up from the shock of the scene. "What the hell is going on here?" Shuya demanded. Tahara still pointed his gun at his forehead. Shuya remained still.
"What the hell are you doing? We have to get some help for Yoshitoki and Noriko."
Sakamochi grimaced and shook his head. Then he repeated, "Forget about it and sit down. You too, Noriko." Noriko, completely pale, slowly looked up at Sakamochi. She seemed more overwhelmed by anger than by the pain she must have been suffering. She raised her eyes and glared back at Sakamochi. "Please get some help." She spoke each word deliberately, for Yoshitoki. Yoshitoki's right arm continued to twitch, but while they watched over him, the twitching subsided. His injury would be fatal unless he were treated immediately. Sakamochi sighed deeply, then addressed the frivolous one. "Then, Mr. Tahara, will you please take care of this?" Before they could figure out what he meant, Tahara pointed his gun downward and pulled the trigger.
Blam!
Yoshitoki Kuninobu's head bounced up once. Then something from his head splashed onto Noriko's face. Dumbstruck, Noriko's mouth hung open. Her face was covered with a dark red substance. Shuya realized his mouth was hanging open too. Although part of his head had been blown away, Yoshitoki's eyes still remained focused on the same part of the floor. He was no longer twitching, though. He was motionless. "See?" Sakamochi said. "He was already dying. Now then, please return to your seats."
"Oh," Noriko looked down at Yoshitoki's deformed head. "My..."
Shuya was also stunned. His eyes were glued to Yoshitoki's face, lying between the legs of the desk. His thoughts were completely paralyzed, as if his own brains had been blown to bits. Memories of Yoshitoki flashed through his dazed mind. The little adventures they took, camping or walking down by the river. A rainy day spent playing an old board game, mimicking Jake and Elwood from the American movie The Blues Brothers who were themselves orphans raised in a Catholic orphanage. Amazingly, it was a dubbed version, although the voice actors were horrible. It had become a black market hit. And then just recently, Yoshitoki's face when he said, "Hey Shuya, I got a crush on someone." And then, "Are you too deaf?" Sakamuchi repeated. Yes. Shuya was deaf to his words. He just stared at Yoshitoki. Noriko was no different. If they hadn't moved, they would have followed in Yoshitoki Kunonobu's footsteps. Right beside Sakamuchi, Tahara pointed his gun at Noriko, while the other two pointed theirs at Shuya. But it was thanks to a calm, in fact, light-hearted voice calling out, "Mr. Sakamuchi?" that Shuya was brought back to his senses, at least enough to gaze numbly at the caller. Beyond Yoshitoki's empty seat, Shinji Mamura had his hand raised. Noriko slowly looked at him too. Let's see. You must be Shinji Mamura. What is it? Shinji put his hand down and spoke. Noriko looks injured. I was wondering if I could help her get back to her seat. Despite the extremity of their situation, Shinji spoke in the usual voice of the third man. Sakamuchi raised his brows slightly, but then nodded. All right. Go ahead. I really want to get things moving. Shinji nodded, stood up, and walked toward Noriko. As he approached her, he took a neatly folded handkerchief out of his pocket and leaned between Yoshitoki's corpse and Noriko. He first wiped Noriko's face, which was covered with Yoshitoki's blood. Noriko hardly reacted. Then he said, "Stand up, Noriko," and put his hand under Noriko's right arm to help her get up. Then, with his back to Sakamuchi, Shinji looked at Shuya, who remained half-standing. Under his sharp, well-defined brows, his eyes had lost their usual mildly amused look. Now he was dead serious. He raised his right brow and moved his chin, shaking his head slightly. His left hand pushed down as if he were making a pressing motion. Shuya didn't understand this signal. Shinji made the same move again. Although he was still dazed, Shuya finally understood that Shinji was telling him to calm down. He looked back at Shinji and slowly eased his way back into his seat. Shinji nodded. After helping Noriko, he turned around and went back to his seat. Noriko sat down. Her right leg dangled from her seat, still pouring blood. Her white sock and sneaker were soaked in red, as if she were wearing a Santa Claus boot on her right foot. Noriko was coming to her senses a little, too. She seemed to be making a gesture to thank Shinji. But as if he could see out the back of his head, Shinji shrugged his shoulders to stop her. Noriko withdrew and saw once again Yoshitoki's body lying below her right hand. She stared at him without a word, but her eyes seemed to be brimming with tears. Shuya also looked again at the corpse, his view partly obscured by the desks. Yes, it was a corpse. There was no doubt about it. It was hard to comprehend, but Yoshitoki had become a corpse. The corpse of someone with whom he had shared 10 years of his life. As he looked at Yoshitoki's gaping eyes, Shuya's anger became more pronounced and clear, like a throbbing pulse. Rage tore through his entire body so powerfully that it almost made him shake. His feelings, which had been muted by the initial shock, were beginning to surface. Shuya turned and bared his teeth at Sakamuchi. Sakamuchi looked amused by Shuya. Shuya would never forgive him for this. He was going to kill the bastard. Shuya had been on the verge of blowing up the way Yoshitoki did, but then Shinji Mamura had intervened at the crucial moment, telling him to calm down only moments ago. Of course, if he blew up now, he would end up like Yoshitoki. And more importantly, now the girl whom Yoshitoki adored so much was severely injured.
If he were to die now, what would happen to Noriko Nakagawa?
Shuya tried his best to tear his eyes away from Sakamochi. He looked down at his desktop. He felt wretched, as if his heart were being crushed from anger and sadness that had no outlet.
Sakamochi quietly laughed.
He looked away from Shuya.
Shuya clenched both of his fists tightly under the desk in order to calm down his still quivering body.
He clenched them tighter and tighter. It was no easy feat to control his emotions, though, with Yoshitoki's dead body bleeding out right in front of him. This was incomprehensible.
How could it be? How could you lose someone so close?
Yoshitoki has always been with me. It doesn't matter how trivial our experiences were. What about the time we played in the river and I saved him from drowning? Or when we got our kicks collecting tons of grasshoppers and stuffing them into a small box, and how they died as a result? We both felt really bad about that. Or when we fought for that dog Eddie's attention. Or when we pulled a prank in school and ended up hiding in the faculty room attic. We almost got caught, but after we managed to escape, we had a good laugh. Yoshitoki and I were always together. It was a fact. He was with me, so how could he be gone now?
Shinji raised his hand again.
I have another question, Mr. Sakamochi.
You again? What is it?
Noriko is injured. I understand we will be participating in the program, but doesn't this make the game unfair?
Sakamochi looked amused.
Well, perhaps, yes. So what is it?
Which means she should be treated, which means the program should be postponed until her recovery, no?
Shuya had barely managed to hold back his anger, so he was amazed by Shinji Mamura's calm conduct. It was a bit strange that Shuya could actually afford to be impressed.
Yes, Shinji Mamura was a lot calmer than Shuya. Shinji was right. If Shinji's request was granted, that might buy them some extra time. Then they might be able to escape.
Sakamochi's face contorted with laughter.
That's a very interesting suggestion, Shinji, he said.
I have an alternative solution. Shall we kill Noriko Nakagawa now and so make the game equal?
Noriko herself, along with the rest of the class, suddenly froze up again.
Shuya could see Shinji's back underneath his school uniform stiffen as he immediately responded,
I take it back. Come on, I was just kidding.
Sakamochi burst out laughing again at Shinji's humorous tone. Tahara, whose right hand had been on his holster, quickly returned it to the strap of his rifle hanging off his shoulder.
Sakamochi clapped his hands again.
All right then, listen up. First of all, each and every one of you differ according to your intelligence, physical dexterity, etc., etc. We're born unequal, so we will not treat Noriko Nakagawa.
Over there, no whispering,
Sakamochi suddenly yelled. He threw a white object where Fumio Fujiyoshi, female student number 18, was in the process of whispering something to female class representative Yuki Utsumi. Shuya wondered whether it was chalk for a moment, but of course that was absurd under the circumstances. The object made the thumping sound of a nail being pounded one last time into a coffin. A thin knife planted itself in the middle of Fumio Fujiyoshi's wide, fair-skinned forehead. Yuki stared at the sight, her eyes open wide. A stranger sight, though, was Fumio herself raising her eyes, struggling to locate the knife planted in her forehead, her head arched back in the attempt. Then she collapsed to the side. As she fell, her left temple hit the corner of Yuki's desk and nudged it. Now there was no room for doubt. Who could survive a knife planted in one's forehead? No one moved. No one spoke a word. Yuki took a deep breath and stared down at Fumio. Noriko was also gazing at her. Shinji Mamura kept his lips pursed as he looked at Fumio. Her body collapsed between the desks just like Yoshitoki's. His throat dry, Shuya held his breath and thought, he did that on a whim.
A whim. Damn it! Our lives are totally at the mercy of this asshole Sakamochi.
Oops, I did it. I'm so sorry. The instructor killing someone? That's against the rules, huh? Sakamochi closed his eyes and scratched his head, but his face became serious again and he said, I need your undivided attention. Impulsive actions are strictly prohibited. Whispering will not be permitted. It's hard on me, but if any of you whisper, know that I have plenty of knives. Shuya clenched his teeth. He told himself to be patient and repeated this over and over, even as two classmates were sprawled dead on the floor. Still, he was drawn to Yoshitoki's face and couldn't help but look at him. He felt he was about to cry. 40 students remaining. Chapter 5. Allow me to explain the rules. Sakamochi returned to his cheerful voice. The classroom began to reek of Yoshitoki Kuninobu's fresh blood, an odor entirely different from that of the dried blood of their instructor, Dragonfly Hayashida. Shuya couldn't see Fumio Fujiyoshi's face from his seat, but it seemed like there was very little blood coming out of her. I think you all know how this works. The rules are simple. All you have to do is kill each other. There are no violations, and, Sakamochi broke into a wide grin, the last remaining survivor can go home. You even get a nice card autographed by the dictator. Isn't that wonderful? In his mind, Shuya spat to his side. Now you may think this is a horrible game, but in life, the unexpected is bound to happen. You must at all times maintain self-control in order to respond properly to accidents. Consider this an exercise, then. Also, men and women will be treated equally. There will be no handicaps for either side. I do have good news for the girls, though. According to program statistics, 49% of past winning survivors have been girls. The motto here is, I'm just like the others and the others are like me. There is nothing to be afraid of. Sakamochi made a signal. The camouflaged trio went into the hall and began to haul in the large, black, nylon day packs. The packs formed a pile right beside the body bag of Mr. Hayashida. Some of them were lopsided, as if they might contain a pole-shaped object that was trying to poke out. We will have you leave one by one. Each one of you will take one of these bags prior to departure. Each pack contains food, water, and a weapon. Let's see. As I said, every one of you differs according to ability. So these weapons will add another random element. Well, that sounds complicated. In other words, it will make the game all the more unpredictable. You will each end up with a randomly selected weapon. As you leave in order, you will take the pack on top of the pile. Each pack also contains a map of the island, a compass, and a watch. Are there any of you who don't have watches? You all do? Oh, I forgot to mention this, but we are on an island with an approximate circumference of 6 kilometers. It's never been used for the program. We had the residents evacuate the island, so there is absolutely no one else here. So? Sakamochi faced the blackboard and grabbed a piece of chalk. He drew a rough diamond shape next to where he had written his name, Kenpatsu Sakamochi. On the top right, he drew an arrow pointing upward and the letter N. He drew an X inside the diamond, to the right of its center. With the chalk still pressed against the blackboard, he turned toward the students. All right, then. We're in the school on this island. This is a diagram of the island, so this indicates the school. Got that? Sakamochi tapped the symbol with his chalk. I'm going to be staying here. I'll be overlooking your efforts. Sakamochi then drew 4 spindle shapes scattered to the north, south, east, and west sides of the diamond. These are ships. They are there to kill anyone attempting to escape by sea. Then he drew parallel vertical and horizontal lines over the island. The diamond shape indicating the island resembled a warped grill now. Starting from the top left, Sakamochi wrote markers in each grid, A1, A2, and so forth, in order. The next row read, B1, B2, etc. This is just a simplified diagram. The map inside your packs will look something like this. Sakamochi placed his chalk down and clapped his hands to clear off the dust. Once you leave the premises, you are free to go anywhere. However, announcements will be made across the entire island at the hours of 12 and 6, in the morning and at night. That's 4 a day. I'll be referring to this map when I announce the location of zones that will be forbidden after a certain time. You must examine your maps closely and check your compasses against them. If you are in a forbidden zone, you must clear out of the area as soon as possible, because... Sakamochi put his hands on the lectern and looked at everyone. Of the collars around your necks. Until he had made this remark, several students had failed to notice the collars. They touched their necks and looked shocked. That device is the result of the latest technology developed by our republic. It is 100% waterproof, anti-shock, and no, it can't come off. It won't come off. If you try to pry it loose, Sakamochi took a small breath, it will explode. Several students who had been fingering their collars immediately released their hands. Sakamochi grinned. The collar monitors your pulse in order to verify signs of life and transmits this information to the mainframe at this school. It also pinpoints your exact position on the island for us. Now, let's return to the map. Sakamochi swung his right arm back and pointed to the map on the blackboard. This same computer will also randomly select forbidden zones. And if there are any students left in the zone after the designated time, of course, dead students won't matter. The computer will automatically detect anyone alive and will immediately send a signal to his or her caller. Then, Shuya knew what he would say. That caller will explode. He was right. Sakamochi paused for a moment to examine everyone. Then he continued. Why would we do this? Because if everyone huddled up together in one spot, the game wouldn't proceed. So we will make you move. Simultaneously, the area you can move around in will shrink. Got that? Sakamochi called it a game. No wonder. It was fucking outrageous. No one said a word, but everyone appeared to understand the rules. All right, so that means hiding in a building will do you no good. Even if you hide in some hole you dug in the ground, the transmission will reach you. Oh, and by the way, you are free to hide in any building, but you won't be able to use the phone. You won't be able to contact your parents. You have to fight on your own. But that's how the game of life is anyway. Now, I did say that the game will begin without any forbidden zones, but there is one exception. This school. 20 minutes after your departure, this school will become a forbidden zone. So please first get out of this area. Let's see. You must be 200 meters away. Got that? Now, in my announcements, I will also read off the names of those who have died in the past 6 hours. Each announcement will be made regularly at 6-hour intervals, but I'll also be contacting the last remaining survivor by announcement as well. Oh, and one more thing. There is a time limit. Listen up. A time limit. A lot of people die in the program, but if no one dies within 24 hours, then your time's expired and it won't matter how many students are left. Shuya guessed what he would say. The computer will detonate the collars of the remaining students. There will be no winner. Again, he was right. Sakamochi stopped speaking. The entire classroom had become silent. The room still reeked of the heavy stench of Yoshitoki Kunenobu's blood. Everyone remained in their collective daze. They were scared, but this situation, in which they were about to be thrown into a killing game, seemed beyond comprehension. As if responding to their general state of mind, Sakamuchi clapped his hands. "Well, I've covered all the tedious details. Now I have something more important to tell you. A piece of advice. Some of you might be thinking that murdering your classmates is impossible. But don't forget there are others willing to do it." Shuyu wanted to scream, "You're full of it!" But with the Fumio Fujiyoshi executed for whispering incident only moments ago, Shuyu held his tongue. Everybody remained silent, but something had suddenly changed and Shuyu knew it. Everyone was looking around, glancing at the pale faces of the others. Whenever anyone's gaze met, their eyes would nervously turn toward Sakamuchi. It only took a matter of seconds, but their expressions were exactly the same. They were tense and suspicious, wondering who was already ready to take part. Only a few, like Shinji Mamura, remained calm. Shuyu clenched his teeth again.
"You're falling into their trap. Think about it. We're a group. There's no way we can kill each other."
"All right then, I need to make sure you get my point. You'll find some paper and pencils in your desks." Everyone timidly took out their paper and pencils. Shuyu had no choice but to follow his instructions. "Now then, I want you to write this down. To memorize something, it's best to write it down. Write this. We will kill each other. Write it 3 times. Shuyu heard the pencil scribbling against the paper. Noriko, too, held her pencil, looking morose. While Shuyu wrote out this insane motto, he glanced down at Yoshitoki's body. He recalled Yoshitoki's warm smile. Sakamuchi continued, "Okay then, if I don't kill, I will be killed. Write this down 3 times too." Shuyu also glanced over at Fumio Fujiyoshi. Her white hands, sticking out of the cuffs of her sailor suit uniform, formed a gentle bowl. She was the nurse's aide. She was quiet, but very caring. Then he looked up at Sakamuchi. "Fucking bastard. I'll stab you in the chest with this pencil." 40 students remaining. Chapter 6. Now then, let's see. Every 2 minutes, one of you will be leaving the classroom. Once you go through this door and turn right down the hall, you'll find the school exit. You are to leave immediately. Anyone loitering in the hall will be immediately shot. Now, who do we start with? According to the program rules, once we determine the first person, the rest of the order will correspond to your classroom seating assignments. Male, female, male, female. Got it? Once we reach the last seat number, we start over from the first number. So, at this point, Shuyu recalled that Noriko's seating number was 15. It was the same as his, which meant that he and Noriko could leave almost simultaneously. Unless she was chosen first, which meant he would be the last one to leave. But could Noriko walk? Sakamuchi took out an envelope from his inner coat pocket. "The first student is selected by lottery. Hold on a second." From his pocket, Sakamuchi produced a pink-ribboned pair of scissors and ceremoniously cut open the end of the envelope. That was when Kazuo Kuriyama spoke up. Like Shinji Mamura, he also sounded calm. But his voice sounded cold with a harsh ring. "I was wondering when the game begins." Everyone looked back to the last row, where Kuriyama was sitting. Shogo Kawada was the only one who didn't turn. He just continued to chew his gum. Sakamuchi gestured with his hand. "As soon as you leave here. So you all might want to hide out to cook up your own strategies, since it's night right now." Kazuo Kuriyama didn't respond. Shuya finally confirmed it was midnight, or 1 a.m., No, it was already near 1:30 a.m. After cutting open the envelope, Sakamochi pulled from it a sheet of white paper and unfolded it. His mouth formed an O, and he remarked, "What a coincidence. It's student number one, Yoshio Akamatsu." Hearing the announcement, Yoshio Akamatsu, who sat in the front row of the column near the steel-plated windows, looked shaken. He was 180 centimeters tall, weighing 90 kilograms, so he was large. But he couldn't even catch a fly ball, nor could he run a full lap around the track. Yoshio was always bumbling through gym class. Now his lips were pale blue.
"Hurry up, Yoshio Akamatsu," Sakamochi said.
Yoshio held the bag he'd packed for the study trip and staggered to his feet. He made his way forward and was handed his day pack from the pile by the camouflaged trio. They now held their rifles at their waists. He stood at the open door and faced the darkness. He looked back at everyone with a terrified face, but then a moment later, he vanished beyond the door. Two or three footsteps turned into the pounding sound of his running, which then faded away. It sounded like he fell once, but then it sounded like he dashed off again. In the quiet room, several students took a deep, restrained breath. "Now we will wait 2 minutes. Then the next one will be female student number one, Mizuo Inada." This routine was repeated over and over, ruthlessly. But there was something Shuya noticed when female student number four, Sakura Ogawa, got up to leave. Sakura sat two seats behind Shuya, in the very last row. As she made her way to the exit, she touched the desk of her boyfriend, Kazuhiko Yamamoto, and left a piece of paper behind for him. She might have dashed off a message on that sheet of paper on which they'd been instructed to write, "We will kill each other." Shuya might have been the only one who saw this. At the very least, Sakamochi didn't seem to notice. Kazuhiko snatched the scrap of paper and clenched it tightly under his desk. Shuya felt a wave of relief. They weren't all consumed by this insanity yet. The bonds of love had yet to be severed. But what was her message? Shuya wondered as she left the classroom. Maybe, he glanced at the map Sakamochi had scrawled on the blackboard, she'd designated one of the areas for a meeting. But the map on the blackboard was too crude, and there was no guarantee at all it'd correspond to the maps they were given. Maybe she indicated a general direction or distance. Besides, the fact that they wanted to meet secretly only meant they didn't trust anyone else and were certain others would try to kill them, which in the end meant they were falling into Sakamochi's trap. "I have no idea what lies beyond this room, but I should at the very least be able to wait outside and talk to the students after me. None of Sakamochi's rules prohibit me from doing this," Shuya thought. "Everyone might be panicking from suspicion, but if we can just get together and discuss the situation, then I'm sure we can come up with a plan. Plus, Noriko was the one who came immediately after him. Could she walk, though?" Shinji Momura also came after him. Hiroki Sugimura would leave before him, though. Shuya considered passing a note to Hiroki, but his seat was too far. Besides, if he tried anything, he could end up like Fumio Fujiyoshi. Hiroki Sugimura was up next. His eyes met Shuya's briefly right before he exited through the room's sliding door. But that was all. In his mind, Shuya sighed deeply. He could only hope Hiroki had the same idea and would be waiting outside, if he could talk the others into waiting too. In front and behind him, the quiet ones, Shogo Kawada, Kazuo Kirayama, and Mitsuko Sauma, left one by one. Chewing his gum, Shogo exited with an indifferent look on his face, completely ignoring Sakamochi and the camouflaged trio. Kiriyama and Sauma left the same way. Of course, when Sakamochi said, There are others willing to do it. The rest of the class must have immediately suspected these three students because they were delinquents. They might not think twice about killing the others in order to survive. But Shuya doubted Kazuo Kuriyama would. Kazuo had his own gang. On top of that, his gang was a lot tighter than your typical group of buddies. Hiroshi Kurenaga, Ruhei Sasagawa, Sho Tsukioka, and Mitsuru Numai. The rules of this game turned everyone else into your enemy, but the five of them killing each other was unimaginable. Besides, Shuya made a careful note of this. When he left, his boys looked disturbingly calm. Kazuo had probably passed around a note to the others. He was probably planning an escape for the five of them. Kazuo was more than capable of outmaneuvering the government. Of course, this also meant that Kazuo wouldn't trust anyone besides his gang. Mitsuko Sauma had a similar kind of group. Her seat was too far from the others, Hirono Shimizu and Yoshimi Yahagi, for her to be able to pass them notes. But Mitsuko Sauma was a girl. There was no way she would play this game. Shogo Kawada was the only one who troubled Shuya. Shogo Kawada had no group. In fact, he didn't even have a single friend. Ever since he transferred to their school, he hardly spoke to anyone in the class. On top of that, there was something elusive about Shogo. Even if he ignored the rumors, there were those wounds covering his entire body. Could it be? Shogo might be the only one willing to participate in this game? It was certainly possible. But Shuya knew the moment he turned suspicious, he was giving in to the government. So he immediately dismissed the thought, though he had trouble dismissing it entirely. Time passed. Many of the girls were crying as they left. Although it felt incredibly short, an hour must have passed according to his calculations. Of course, without Yoshitoki Kuninobu, the elapsed time was reduced by 2 minutes. Female student number 14, Mayumi Tendo, vanished into the hall, and Sakamuchi called out, "Male student number 15, Shuya Nanahara." Shuya grabbed his bag and stood up. He thought, "I did all I could before leaving the classroom." Instead of heading directly to the exit, he took the aisle on his left. Noriko turned around and watched Shuya approaching her. Sakamuchi raised his voice. "Shuya!" And his knife. "Wrong direction." Shuya stopped. The three soldiers had their rifles cocked. His throat stiffened. Then he said nervously, "Yoshitoki Kuninobu was my friend. The least I could do is close his eyes. According to the great dictator's education policy, we're supposed to respect the dead." Sakamuchi hesitated for a moment, but then he grinned and put his knife down. "You're so caring, Shuya." "All right then." Shuya took a small breath, then stepped forward. He stopped in front of Noriko's desk where Yoshitoki's corpse was lying. Although he'd demanded the right to close his friend's eyes, he couldn't help but freeze up. Now that he was up close, he saw, courtesy of the frivolous soldier, thin red flesh and something white in Yoshitoki's blood-stained short hair. He realized it was bone. Thanks to the bullets wedged in his head, Yoshitoki's big eyes had bulged out even further. He looked stupefied, his eyes upturned like those of a starving refugee waiting to be fed. Pink, slimy liquid consisting of blood and saliva dripped out of his mouth, which was opened slightly. Dark blood poured out of his nostrils. It dribbled down his chin and into the pool of blood flowing out his chest. It was horrible. Shuya placed his bag near him and leaned over. He lifted Yoshitoki's body, which was lying face first. As Shuya lifted him, blood poured freely from the chest of his torn and blackened school uniform and splashed onto the floor. His lanky body felt incredibly light. Was it because all that blood had drained out of him? Holding Yoshitoki's light body, Shuya's head cooled down. More than sadness or fear, it was anger that overwhelmed him.
Yoshitoki, I'm going to avenge your death. I swear to you that I will.
There wasn't much time. He wiped the blood off Yoshitoki's face with the palm of his hand, then gently closed his eyes. He laid his body down and clasped his hands on his chest. Then as he pretended to fumble over picking up his bag, he leaned over to Noriko as close as he could and quickly whispered, "Can you walk?" That was enough to provoke the camouflaged trio to reach for their rifles, but Shuya managed to get a nod from Noriko. Shuya turned to Sakamochi and the trio, clenched his fist for Noriko to see, and pointed his thumb to the exit to indicate, "I'll be waiting. I'll be waiting outside." Shuya didn't look back at Noriko, but out of the corner of his eye he looked beyond Yoshitoki's desk, where Shinji Mamura stared ahead, faintly smiling with his arms folded. He might have seen Shuya's signal. Shuya felt all the more relieved. It was Shinji. If Shinji's on our side, we can escape, no prob. But Shinji Mamura might have been more aware of their situation than Shuya was. He might have been saying with that grin, "Well, this may be adios, amigo Shuya." The thought didn't occur to Shuya at the time, though. Shuya took a moment to think before he received his black day pack, and he did the same as he approached Fumio Fujiyoshi's corpse, shutting his eyes. He wanted to remove the knife from her forehead, but decided against it. When he stepped out of the classroom, he felt a pang of regret, wishing he had removed it for her. 40 students remaining.
Chapter 7. The hall was unlit. Only the light from the classroom fell across the floor planks. The windows in the hall were also sealed with sheets of black steel. They provided protection against attacks from rebellious students like Shuya who might decide to escape the game. Of course, as soon as they were off, this area would already be forbidden. He looked to his right. There was another room, then another, both identical to the room he'd just exited. And then at the far end of the dark hall, there was what looked like a double door exit. To his left, at the end of the hall, there was another room. Was it the school's faculty room? The door was open and the lights were on. Shuya looked beyond the door, where a legion of Special Defense Forces soldiers were sitting on steel folding chairs behind a wide desk. 20 or 30? No. There were as many soldiers as there were students. In fact, Shuya had hoped that if his day pack came equipped with a gun, it was possible, along with knife wound and choking, gunshot wound was listed as a cause of death in the program reports, or if some of the others waiting for him were equipped with guns, then they could use them against Sakamochi and his men before everyone departed. In other words, before the school became a forbidden zone. But this sort of plan had long ago been anticipated. The three men with Sakamochi weren't the only soldiers accompanying him. Of course, that wasn't at all surprising. One of the soldiers tilted his head, glancing up from the mug in his hand to look at Shuya. Like the trio in the classroom, his face was devoid of expression. Shuya took to his heels and hurried to the exit. So now the only thing they could do was unite. But maybe there were soldiers stationed outside to prevent them from waiting for each other. Still, Shuya quickly ran down the dark corridor and went through the double doors, then descended several porch stairs. Under the moon, an empty athletic field the size of 3 tennis courts spread out beyond the building. There were woods beyond the field. To his left was a small mountain. His field of vision expanded on the right to reveal a pitch-black darkness that spread to the horizon, the sea. Small points of light twinkled beyond the ocean. The mainland, Shuya thought.
The program officially took place within the prefecture of the selected junior high school. Sometimes the location was a mountain surrounded by high-voltage fences, or abandoned prison houses that hadn't yet been demolished.